All right, might as well start. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Stu Fox. I work for Datacom Systems. I'm a bit out of practice at doing this. I was here last year talking as a Microsoft employee, and they asked me to speak again, and I said, yeah, that seems like a good idea. And then the last couple of weeks, as I've been sitting at home at night, you know, preparing this demo, I was thinking, what was I thinking? You know, why am I doing this? This is taking so much time. But I think I'm doing it because it's fun. I'm going to be talking today about building cloud services with the Windows Azure pack. I can't really see much from up here. Like, the lights are really blinding, and I'm up there. So if I'm not looking at you, it's not because I don't care. I do. So yeah, so I'm going to talk about building cloud services with the Azure pack. Azure Pack's a new feature in Windows, or as part of Windows Server 2012 R2. So we'll be looking at the preview of it today, and you know, hopefully the next couple of, well, you know, when Windows Server 2012 R2 ships, hopefully we'll see the full version of the Azure Pack come as well. So I guess to kind of position what Azure Pack's all about, who's aware of Windows Azure? Or kind of, oh good, you've heard of it then? Okay, that's good. So to kind of position it, you know, you've got Microsoft's offering of Windows Azure, and it runs up in their data centers all around the world, and you know, it's a great big thing. But with the Windows Azure pack, the intent is kind of to enable other people to run a subset of the Windows Azure features. So people like service providers, and you know, even enterprises running it on premises, you know, running their own instance of Azure-like functionality, and we'll have a look. And I'll show you through the session, you know, how similar some of this stuff is. But the idea is, yeah, that we can then have a consistent experience across our, you know, across the Microsoft public cloud platform. As a service provider, I can, you know, host this for you, or as an enterprise, you can have that same consistent experience in your own data center. So it's kind of an end-to-end story. It doesn't matter where you deploy this, you're still getting the same experience. And that's kind of the whole point of it. And you know, I think Microsoft calls this kind of the Cloud OS concept. You know, the concept, it doesn't matter where you're running, you're actually, you know, you've got the same experience. So Windows Azure Packs, in the preview release at least, is focused on bringing kind of three main sets of cloud services along. So first one is the website service, and so the website service is about bringing the same highly scalable web application platform as a service that you can run in Azure, and bring that locally. And so that means you get this whole bunch of the same features around scalability, elasticity, self-deployment, you know, optimized for DevOps, integrated with all the source control features that the same as Windows Azure does, and it's all fully self-service. And we'll have a good look at the website stuff in a demo in a while. Next one is Service Bus. So as people are building these modern web applications, they're using Service Bus to provide a messaging source between, say, you know, maybe between different applications, or between their cloud applications and their on-premises solutions, you know, or maybe their cloud services and their legacy solutions. They're using Service Bus to do this. And so Windows Azure has got Windows Azure Service Bus. Same thing, Microsoft brings Service Bus into the Azure pack. It's kind of a developer thing, and I don't know much about it, so we probably won't look much at that. In fact, we won't look at it at all, but we'll talk about it a bit. But it is kind of a developer thing, but it is good to have there. And in fact, Microsoft actually released the Azure pack in kind of a preview earlier on this year. I think in sort of January, they released a thing called Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, which I think is probably one of their better names. Obviously, a director of sales or something got hold of it. Yeah, it's a really good name. But, you know, obviously, they've changed it to Windows Azure Pack. It's a bit more snappy. But when they released that, they released websites and virtual machines, but they didn't release Service Bus. And they kind of aimed it at service providers rather than being on-premises. And one of the things that really came back to them was that people really wanted Service Bus in the product as well. So as they've gone Azure back, they've also included the Service Bus stuff as well. Next bit is virtual machines. So the ability to run, you know, hosted infrastructure as a service, running VMs, and you can run your standard VMs, and you can run these new Elastic VMs as well. I'll show you what that means in a while. Bringing in the virtual network concept that the Windows Azure has, so you can extend your data center network to a service provider running Windows Azure Pack as well, take advantage of that virtual networking capability. Running Windows and Linux, so it's not just a Microsoft solution, and there's a few things we'll see today that there's a whole bunch of stuff that it's not just a Microsoft solution, and in fact Windows Azure is not just a Microsoft solution either. And the last bit is kind of not the cloud service itself, but the same service management portal that you get in Windows Azure, you also get on-premises as well. So you get not just a consistent platform, you get a consistent look and feel whether you're logging into Microsoft's Windows Azure, whether you're logging into a service provider's hosted Azure Pack, or whether you're logging into your own enterprise Azure Pack as well. So you get that same Azure, that same consistent view no matter what you're doing. The great thing, when they released Windows, I'll call it WAS-WIS from now on, if you don't mind, Windows Azure for Windows Service, Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. When they released WAS-WIS, one of the reasons they didn't, it was great acronym, eh? One of the reasons they didn't kind of focus on the on-premises scenario was because the authentication stuff wasn't there. So Windows Azure Pack brings in the ability to use Active Directory logons and the ability to do federated identity with ADFS as well. So that was one of the big key things for Azure Pack. It means that you can now enable that on-premises scenario and people can use their same credentials to sign into the Windows Azure Pack as they do to sign into their machines. So if you take a look at what Windows Azure looks like, you kind of see these layers. And the bottom bit is kind of the Windows Azure fabric, and that's kind of, I guess, Microsoft's secret magic sauce. And on top of that, you get your cloud services layered. So you get your websites, you get your VMs, you get your SQL Azure, Service Bus, caching, storage, CDN, media services, all that kind of stuff. So they've got a bunch of services that they run there. On top of that, there's the service management API. And on top of that sits the self-service portal, which is basically a stateless portal. It sits here, and that's where you interact with Windows Azure. And that's where you see and interact with all the stuff that you've got there. And so that's what Windows Azure looks like. In terms of the Windows Azure Pack experience, well, the fabric is built on Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2. So it's a consistent kind of experience. The stuff you can buy is the stuff you use to build the Windows Azure Pack. But then you get the same common management experience because that same service management API comes across, which means that if you're talking as a user of Windows Azure, you can talk to the same API that you can talk to when you talk to Windows Azure. You can talk to that same API using Azure Pack. So the API is consistent between those two environments. And then the self-service portal comes across, so you get a consistent view of the self-service consistent view when you log in and look at that. They also add a provider portal. So, and we'll have a look at both the consumer and the provider portal. So the provider portal is how you kind of administer this thing and make resources available and configure it all up. So there's a separate bit which you don't see in Windows Azure, but it's there. And then there's the services. So you get in this release, websites, VMs, SQL, Service Bus. Microsoft, there's a Microsoft slide, by the way. Future services is kind of, it could mean anything, I suppose. Who knows what that's going to be? I mean, personally, I'd like to see the Azure storage, the blob storage stuff come across. That would be fantastic. But who knows what else will come across? And there's kind of some things that make sense to bring across, and some things that probably don't. Things that are more suited to just running in the cloud anyway. So there's that, and then you get a consistent development experience across both those platforms as well. So you can see it's really about consistency of experience. In terms of what the data center or your service provider or what your enterprise uses, it's all System Center 2012 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, and the Azure Pack, and that's the base of it. There's a few other bits and pieces in there, the bits, virtual machine manager, this thing called service management automation. Has anyone heard of service management automation? It's a new thing in Orchestrator, and it's basically a way to run basically PowerShell workflow-based automation tasks. So, if you've seen Orchestrator, you will have seen the GUI for building orchestration tasks, and it's great. The service management automation thing is a new bit in 2012 R2, which basically brings in these PowerShell workflow-based automation tasks, and you can trigger those off the portal as well. I'm not going to spend any time looking at it, in fact, but there are some links at the end of the slides that have got some links to some stuff about service management automation, because it is a pretty it's a pretty big field, and you could probably have a couple of sessions just talking about that. Ops Manager, obviously for monitoring. Service Provider Foundation, which was introduced in System Center 2012 for providing a way for portals and things to talk to VMM and the associated infrastructure. And obviously Server 2012, R2, and Hyper-V. So it's probably a good time to quickly have a look at the tenant experience. So, but first, before we look at the tenant experience, just quickly, in case you haven't logged on to Windows Azure and haven't seen it, just quickly, there's the Windows Azure portal. So this is real Windows Azure. And you know, I've got my cloud services down on the left here. And you know, I can do some things like I can create new websites, and you know, I can create a website from a gallery. So instead of wanting to just create a blank website, I might want to start with a starter site eventually. You know, so I might want to new CMS or something, so you know, maybe I'll use Orchard or something, so I can quickly deploy using a, you know, from the Windows Azure Gallery, I can deploy the Orchard CMS straight away, bang, in a couple of minutes, have that up and running, you know, in the on the Azure platform, really easy to do. And so that's kind of the website, you know, the quick website experience. And the same with, you know, virtual machines. I can spin up virtual machines from, you know, templates and all that kind of stuff, spin those up really quickly and easily. And so you can kind of see the experience. It's pretty straightforward. So that's Windows Azure. I'm not going to spend any more time talking about looking at Windows Azure. So let's go to the Windows Azure Pack portal. So Windows Azure Pack, I'll log on. You can never type when you're on stage, it's just a law. And if you look quickly there, you'll see the URL is an ADFS URL, so I'm actually logging on with my AD credentials using ADFS. So it's all configured up for ADFS. And very shortly, I should see the home screen. And you'll see, actually, that's, like I said before, it's a consistent look and feel. That is basically what Azure looks like. You know, I've got my cloud services on the left. I've got the resources I've got running in the middle there. And so I've got the kind of same experience. So, you know, I want to create a new website. I'll create from the gallery. And you see, I get the same experience. I get the same stuff. I want to run an Orchard CMS. I can run that up, and I can spin that up really quickly on my service provider or my on-premises infrastructure just using the Windows Azure Pack. So that kind of whole experience of it's consistent, plus they've brought through stuff like, you know, the gallery and those kinds of things. So we can actually, you know, have a really, really consistent experience. And, you know, once I've got a website up and running, I can quickly browse that, and that will bring up my my Orchard CMS website up and running for me, you know, so it's running on the website's infrastructure eventually.
That's true. Yeah. When they upload the content that's available out in the Azure world, does that come down as content updates for the Azure Pack as well?
So the question is, when they update content for Windows Azure, does that come down into Windows Azure Pack? And I guess certain things do. So when I go back to this gallery, that gallery feed's actually coming from Microsoft. So if it's optional for a vendor to publish into the Azure Pack available stuff as well, but if they make it available in the Windows Azure Pack, then you won't have to do anything. You better just provision from the gallery. So yeah, that stuff transfers over. As Microsoft releases new services though, so if they release, you know, a new version of Service Bus, that won't necessarily translate through to Azure Pack. So it's kind of, there's the website's a bit will, but not all stuff. So there you go, there's Orchard CMS, and it's up and running eventually. So that's kind of a quick look at the tenant experience. We'll come back and have a look at some more stuff in a bit. In fact, I'll leave that. Oops. All right, let me start Twitter. Right. So that's a quick look at the tenant experience. So kind of you think conceptually around what the kind of roles are that use this. Service consumers and service providers are kind of the two things. I think of service consumers as users. I don't know, you might not. Or pains in the neck, you might call them. But basically, service consumers, they're using the stuff you're providing. They're getting it from you or from a service provider as an off-the-shelf solution or as a service, you might say. So it's kind of what they do. They want things like self-service administration. I want to be able to come in and sign up on demand, and I want to be able to provision a website when I need to and do all that stuff. I want to be able to, if I need to, scale up my website on demand. I want to have that kind of illusion of infinite scalability, which, you know, obviously Windows Azure gives you a really good illusion of infinite scalability, because it kind of is. You know, like, there's probably not much that you could throw at it. Whereas, you know, when you're running on a service provider or on your own internal infrastructure, you've kind of got less of an illusion of infinite infrastructure available, but you still have to provide that capacity on demand. They want to be able to operate this thing themselves, but they do want predictable costs. You know, Windows Azure gives you the ability to spend as much as you like, as quickly as you like, probably. If you're running internally for a service provider, you may not want that same model, but you do want kind of be able to understand what your cost model is. And they do want to be up and running quickly. So basically, you know, service consumers consume cloud services. It's mostly developers and IT pros. I know lots of you, and I know lots of you are IT pros. Any developers actually in the audience? Wow. Oh, good. Cool. Well, hopefully you get something from this. Self-service experience. They want self-service. They build and deploy their applications. They manage their own applications, and they pay for services. So that's kind of the service consumer. So now let's look at what the break those little the various services down. So the first one was websites. So basically, it's talking about, you know, the website stuff is around building these new modern web applications, highly scalable. So they're building these highly scalable web applications, using integrated source control. They want to be able to see what the applications are actually doing, so I can come in and see what my apps are doing with real-time information. And I want to be able to use the languages and tools that I choose. So it might be .NET. But, you know, it might be Node, it might be PHP, it might be Python. I want to use different tools and languages. I might want to use Git as my source control method. I might want to use the Dropbox deployment method. You know, so those things are available for us. And that's kind of what the website stuff is all about. So, and we look at the architecture a little bit later of this, but basically, you know, that's what's happening with the website stuff. Here's a screenshot of the website service in action, but what's actually better is if we have a look at it. So I just showed you kind of that kind of gallery experience of how we, you know, go in and provision a new website. Some of the other stuff, you know, that we didn't look at. So in terms of here's a website, here's the dashboard. So I can see what's happening on my website, which is basically nothing because I'm not doing. Actually, maybe I'll use that Orchard one because stuff is happening there, or has been. I can see, you know, I can see some traffic started coming in. I can see, you know, how much CPU time I've used. I can see how much data I'm using, how much file system storage is being consumed, and how much memory is being used by this thing. And I can also, some of the stuff I can do, you know, I can come in and configure what version of .NET I'm running. So, you know, I'm running .NET 3.5 or 4.5. What version of PHP I'm running. Whether I've got WebSockets enabled, things like SSL certs. I need to be able to upload my own SSL cert, so I can come and do that here. I want to map custom domain names. So at the moment, it's pointing at some, you know, orchard.azure.datacomcloud.co.nz, but I want it to point to, you know, myvanitysite.com or whatever. So you can manage the domain names that it will accept here. Turn on things like application logging. Turn on web server logging, turn on detailed error messages, turn on failed request tracing, so that, you know, I don't have to ring up the service provider and say, hey, get me the logs for this, or get me that failed request log for this. You know, you just come in and provision it and download it yourself. And you know, other things like handler mappings. One of the things I really like is the kind of the scale stuff. So the first thing is kind of there's basically three well there's two modes of running in terms of the websites. There's kind of shared and reserved. Shared is basically you're running on a shared web server that's running multiple instances of different websites. Reserved is basically you're running on a dedicated machine that's running an instance of IIS dedicated to you, and that's kind of the difference. And you can switch between those. You know, I can just go, well, switch me to basic shared at the moment, and it will make a change for me, and it will do that automatically. I could switch to reserved, but I don't have any reserved workers sitting in place, so nothing will happen, or it will error out. But once I'm in this basic shared, I can actually say, well, if I'm running one instance, I'm running one instance at the moment, but say I wanted to scale up to run, you know, three instances of this website, I can do that really quickly. I can do that, hit save, and it will spin up, you know, on three different shared workers, it will spin up extra instances of my website. So I can handle the scale, you know, if I've got scale demands, you know, maybe I've got a Bruce Springsteen concert coming up or whatever, then maybe I'll do that. But, you know, for the 15 minutes that you're going to sell the tickets for. Those kinds of things. But, you know, so scaling up a website, really, really easy. And one of the other things, the last thing is kind of the source control stuff. If you look here, we've got a bunch of different URLs and things. So basically, you know, you can FTP into this guy and provision content if you want via FTP. You can, if you go download the published profile, you download the published profile from Visual Studio, and you can push straight from Visual Studio to the websites as well, so that gives you that stuff. I can also set up deployment from source control, so, you know, so I can say, where's my, you know, I want to set up a local Git repository, I've got an external repository, so I can provision from GitHub or, you know, something like that, provision stuff, or, you know, or the Dropbox stuff. I think there's also CodePlex and a couple of other source control integrations as well, which, you know, so I could say, you know, set up local Git repository and it'll make it available for me, and there you go, it's done. And then even gives me the, you know, URL to push to, gives me all the commands on how to actually push my content up using Git. So it's, you know, so in terms of doing that, it's really straightforward, and again, self-service. So a developer can come, push their own content, do all that stuff without having to involve IT pros or anyone else to push content. So that's kind of the website stuff. Any questions while I'm here? You again. So the question is, the auto scale features in Azure, can you use those here? Not in the preview. I don't know whether that's coming in the final release or not. I kind of, you know, when it said on that slide, you know, future services, I wonder whether auto scale would be kind of a logical one to bring back, but I don't know the answer. Any other questions? So the next thing is virtual machines. So the intent with virtual machines is to bring an Azure consistent infrastructure as a service experience, so I can provision up new virtual machines. Straightforward, you know, same thing, go through a wizard, spin up a virtual machine, have it up and running, and away we go. Same Windows Azure API, those kinds of things. But it also brings in this new concept of a virtual machine role, which, if any of you guys have played with VMM and are familiar with kind of the service concept where you say, you know, I've got a service and I can scale bits and pieces of the service, virtual machine roles is kind of the same thing. I can have these virtual machines which are basically a unit by themselves, but I can scale them up. So I can say, you know, instead of having the same as what I did with the websites, and, you know, I can say I can scale up from one website to three. I can say I've got this one VM running, but I want to run two more instances of it, and so it'll spin up another two instances using the same template, and so I can spin those up really quickly. And so it's more making the virtual machines more like part of the platform as a service as well. And that's kind of done with the same kind of gallery experience. The gallery in this case isn't published by Microsoft. It's published out of Virtual Machine Manager, so you have to configure that stuff. And it does support Windows and Linux, so you know, you can do both those things. And then also the virtual network stuff. So being able to do site-to-site connectivity, site-to-site VPNs between a service provider running AsiaPac and your own internal servers. And using VMMs or Windows Servers network virtualization stack, you can actually bring your own IP addresses into that as well, run your own IPs on AsiaPac VMs, if your hoster has enabled that. Same thing, we'll actually just have a look because it's easier. So, virtual machines. So there you go, I've got three virtual machines running. I've got 2012 R2 role running, and we'll have a look at that in a second. And I've got a couple of standalone VMs running, so I've got Linux and a Windows Server machine running. And so when I go into a virtual machine, same sort of thing, I get a dashboard view, and I can see what's happening with that virtual machine, which is kind of next to nothing as well, which is good. My demos are going to be going slow, but I can see this machine's a two-core machine. I'm using maybe four cores in my subscription. It's using a couple of gigs of RAM, and I'm using a bit more than that in my subscription. How much storage I'm using, and how many virtual machines I've got. Things like what my host name is, what its IP address is, those kinds of things, OS and that kind of stuff. And if I come in and configure, I can actually even change the size of it. So if I wanted to, change it from two cores to four cores, I can do that. So switch between templates. Obviously, that involves reboots and things, so I'm not going to do that at the moment. And it's the same kind of provision experience. I can go to virtual machine role, quick create, and say what image I'm going to use. 2012 R2. What size I'm going to use, password. In fact, this is going to create me a role virtual machine, but I'm not going to do it anyway. So, but those kinds of things. And same with the standalone virtual machine. I can just do, same sort of thing. Just quickly provision up a VM, have it create it for me. I'll wait, 10, 15 minutes while it provisions, and then it'll be ready for me. How that stuff works. The role stuff's a bit more interesting because you get that kind of same dashboard view, you see the same kind of stuff, but I now see how many instances I've got running. So I've got, computer 01 I've got one instance running. So I've got, one guy running, but I can scale. So I can scale up and say, I want to run more instances of that. So I can scale up to five running instances of that particular VM role. And so, like I say, it makes it more like the PaaS-style stuff. And so this, I can come in and see what configuration we've got applied to it and how the machines are going to be named. So the next machine along will be called Computer 002 and those kinds of things. And similar to what we do with what you see in VMM in terms of service templates, you actually see, I might say my initial instance count is two. I want to have two running to start with. But then I want to say my minimum instance is one, so if I need to scale right down, I can scale down to one, and if I want to scale up, my maximum is five, so I can be elastic in between those things, and I can just make choices about how many instances happen to be running at that point. So that's kind of what the role stuff does. Some of the other stuff you can do here, so I've got a Linux machine, and this is, it's a similar sort of stuff down the bottom here. I can stop, start, shut down, that kind of stuff, but I've also got console connect. So this Linux guy, I can use a console connect, and you'll see I'm getting an RDP file. So I go RDP file, open that, and I connect up, and now I'm RDP'd into a Linux box. So mind exploded. Yeah. I'm not actually. But it is basically, it's a console connection through the Linux box. So and you get the same experience with Windows. You can console connect through to Windows, and Windows actually gives you also gives you the remote desktop, so you can actually just get a straight remote desktop session as opposed to a console. They're functionally equivalent anyway in 2012 R2, so it's not really that much different. I won't show you because it actually doesn't work. A couple of things. If you do happen to be playing with the preview, if anyone actually has downloaded the preview and has played with it and going, how did Stu get that console working? It's actually really, really not obvious, and it's not documented. A guy's put up a blog post yesterday about how to do it. because it wasn't documented and only people in the tap got to see the documentation on how to do it. For the remote desktop connect, it actually doesn't work unless you're using IPv6. So it only works with if you're using IPv4, it just doesn't work. But that will again be fixed for RTM as well. So there's a couple of things that, if you are playing with the preview, if you want to use console connect, look up the blog post on how to do it. If you try and do RDP, don't bother because it's just seems to be impossible. So yes, but that's kind of the virtual machine experience. Any questions? Bevan? Oh, Will.
What you're seeing in the medium system, is that filtered through based on cloud's attendance, basically resources you've assigned?
So the question is, what we're seeing here, is it based on what filtered through from VMM and who you logged in as and that kind of stuff? Yeah, it is. And we'll have a look at the admin experience a bit later, and I'll kind of show you a bit of that stuff. But it's basically Azure Pack is talking to Service Provider Foundation, and Service Provider Foundation is talking to VMM. And it's Azure Pack's actually doing most of the hard work from what I can make out, but it is creating tenants and users inside VMM that get kind of mapped through, and so you see the stuff that you're allowed to see. Yep. Right, cool. So next up, service bus. So again, it's a queue-based messaging service for cloud-based apps based on Windows Service Bus 1.1. So at the moment, that's in preview. Hopefully, that will ship for the RTM of Windows Server 2012 R2. And as I understand it, that's kind of the same as the same experience as you get across Windows Azure Service Bus as well. You can use, again, it's kind of a, you use what protocols you like to talk to it. Use standard protocols, use REST or AMQP or WS to talk to it, and use whatever language is suitable for you to talk to it. It doesn't kind of impose a whole lot of requirements around that, as far as I know. And so you can provision your own service bus resources in the Azure Pack management portal. Like I say, not a developer, so kind of it's a bit weird for me, so I don't really understand it. So you can provision your own stuff. Like I say, there's the provisioning window inside Azure Pack. And again, it seems pretty easy to use. So if you want to do service bus, you can make it available to your users as well. A couple of the other things, so one of the things I talked about was identity. So I talked about when WAS came out at the start of the year, it didn't have Active Directory integration, it was just kind of standalone credentials. With this release, Microsoft have added the Active Directory integration and ADFS Federation support as well. And it's also, and they've also added support for co-administration. So, so when that view I had in that console, I had my view, but I could also have a bunch of co-administrators if they needed to see my resources. They could, they could come in and log in with their own credentials, but see the resources that I want them to see. So that's kind of a cool thing as well. Also, there's database services available, so I can provision up SQL Server and MySQL databases on demand. Same experience. I might show you that in a second, but so you can just spin up a new database if you need to. And it'll create it on the SQL Server that you've got out there, or a MySQL Server somewhere. Same sort of experience. And then, like I say, there's the value-add services from the gallery as well. And then there is kind of an extensibility model built into this as well. So if, as a provider, you want to provide extra stuff, like value-add services or those kinds of things, you can actually extend the portal. You can provide add-ons to things like virtual machines or add-ons to websites. And extend the portal in that way, so you can actually sell additional stuff if you're a service provider, or make additional stuff available to your end users if you're an enterprise. And so there is an API available for doing all that as well. And actually, that's probably a good point to just, I'll just quickly show you that co-administration stuff. So I've got an account here. I've got a couple of subscriptions there's a couple of things I'm subscribed to, a couple of plans I'm subscribed to, and we'll look at plans in a second. But I can see I've got a couple of plans and one that's failed. But I can come over here and I've got a bunch of administrators, right? So bunch of co-administrators, and I've got different things that they're allowed to see. Politicians, I wouldn't even trust them with my cat. You can see, I've got Cunliffe, Robertson and Jones, and I wouldn't trust Jones in my websites. So that's kind of, so when they log in with their credentials, maybe I should do that. So when they log in with their credentials, they see the stuff that's in my subscription that they're allowed to have access to. Don't tell David Cunliffe I'm doing this. I'll sign up. Oh, God. Like I say, it's just a law. You cannot type when you're on stage. Probably should have chosen, like, Shane Jones because it's easier to type. But there you go. You see the self-service experience as well. I've just come in and signed up. And away I go. I'll skip this. But you can see I've got access to exactly the same resources that I had as my standard user account. So that's kind of the co-administration experience as well. So, and one of the cool things I've added actually in the Azure pack is the ability to have an Active Directory group as co-administrator. So instead of having, to manage all these individual users, you just say, here's this group, and as members come and go, they can sign in and see the resources and do all that. So that's quite a cool little feature as well. So, any questions? Good. How are we doing for time? So now let's flip over and look at what the service provider experience is, and now we'll have a look at kind of how we administer this and make it all kind of fit together. So a service provider provides cloud services. It's hosters and enterprises. This is kind of viable for both. We're deploying shared resources. We create offers for our consumers. Our big focus is on driving costs down and money up, especially as a service provider. Our goal is to try and squeeze as much as we can onto this and pay as little as we can for it. So in terms of how this kind of works, a service provider makes these plans available, and the plans are kind of built up of these different resources: virtual machines, websites, service bus, SQL Server, MySQL, that kind of stuff. We manage that stuff. We create, quotas. We create plans that are, aimed at specific markets. We can come in and, we can add add-ons for those plans if we need to. We can add different applications in there, and we can make these plans available publicly, or we can make them private plans, in which case you actually have to sign someone up to them manually from the admin portal, or, as you saw in that one, I just signed up as an end user, and I self-service signed up. And so, you get a dashboard around your plan so you can see who's signing up, how often. You might throw a new plan out there and go, like, no one's signed up in the last 2 months or whatever. Maybe I should readjust that plan, or maybe it's too much or whatever. Or, I put a plan out there and 1,000 people signed up in like 5 minutes. Maybe it's too cheap, or I don't know, those kinds of things. So so you get that kind of experience. But I'll quickly show you a demo of that. So I'll flick over the service management portal. So this is basically the same look and feel, but now I'm logged on to the admin portal rather than the tenant portal. And so it's kind of a similar thing, but instead of seeing, being able to provision resources, I actually have stuff that I can configure. So I can configure up my website service, and I can see the different bits and pieces that I've got configured up to do this. I can see what websites are actually up and running, so I can see a full view of my infrastructure and what's there. I talked about, Bevan, you asked about the feed, the web applications that come down. That's actually coming from this URL here. and you know, I can set a bunch of stuff up around how end users interact, what the URLs they connect to. So when I want to publish content via Visual Studio or via Git, it goes through this URL. When I want to FTP, it goes through the FTP URL, those kinds of things. You know, it's the same with Virtual Machine Manager. I can configure up all my resource. I'm registered against a Virtual Machine Manager server with a tenant cloud there. I can see the various virtual machines that are available in the environment, and there are a few, so it takes a little while to get them. So yes, I can see the state of those. And then I talked about that service management automation stuff. I can, you know, link an action with a runbook, so I can say, you know, when, you know, I can, you know, when things change, I can, you know, if I create a new user role, then run this particular runbook, and it might add them to a group or those kinds of things. And that's kind of what that service management automation stuff is about. So as a tenant, as a service provider or an enterprise, when stuff happens in my environment, even if it's self-service provided, then I can still have my automation and my runbooks triggered off and have the right configurations applied, those kinds of things. Plans is kind of how we make these resources available. So if I want to create a new plan, I can create a new plan, and it's called TechEd NZ. And I can say what resources I want available in the cloud. So, you know, maybe I want to say it's just for websites and for SQL servers, but I don't want virtual machines, or maybe I just want virtual machines available. And that's it, I've created a plan. But now I've created this plan, it's private, and I need to configure it up. So, so I need to say what virtual machine manager I'm going to talk to, what cloud I'm going to talk to, and then what resources I'm going to give access to. You know, so I might want to say, well, they're only allowed to create, you know, 5 virtual machines in this plan, and they're only allowed to use, you know, 5 cores, and you can only use, you know, 10 gig of RAM or something. Those kinds of things. So this plan is like eminently customizable. I can say what networks they're connected to. So I might have different networks for different tenants. So I might say this is a plan for tenant A, so they'll see the tenant A virtual network. Scroll down a bit far. And then I might say, you know, what hardware profiles are going to be available. And these hardware profiles are coming out of Virtual Machine Manager, so these are just getting pulled straight from there. So when I create a new hardware profile in VMM, I can make it available in the plan here. And same with templates. So same thing, I'm getting templates out of VMM. Maybe I want to do small VMs only, Windows and Linux. And then the other one was those gallery items, and so that's where I can create those role-based VMs. And so if I've got different, this is an opportunity for kind of a service provider or an enterprise or whatever to create their own unique thing. So it might be I've got an IIS server, maybe it's a, configured up Active Directory controller or all those kinds of things. So I can offer those kind of things as value adds and do all the configuration stuff myself. So, you know, so maybe I'll just say I'll add a 2012R2 template, and I can say what I want them to do. I don't really want them to do all these checkpoints and stuff, but I would like them to be able to connect to the console. So I can save that, and that plan is now configured, and I can go back to that plan. Go back there, and I can change access, and I can make it public. If I want to make it available to everyone, I say, yep, make public. And so now anyone coming in will be able to see that plan in the service management portal. I might even be able to, my account subscriptions, sign up for additional plan, and there you go, TechEd NZ, so I could add myself to that plan straight away and start using the resources in that plan. So pretty straightforward.
So you keep track of
Is there any way to keep track of, to make sure you haven't over-allocated your resources effectively? Yeah, there is. We'll talk about that in a second, actually, if that's okay. But actually, nice segue. Any questions on the plans? Any other questions on the plans? Again, nice segue. I'll also cover that next as well. So yes, well, kind of. How's that? I do kind of, yeah. So in terms of usage and billing and how you keep track of that stuff, there's a usage and billing engine, a usage engine built into this. So you can extract the data out. The intent isn't for Microsoft to provide a billing engine in this application. The intent is for you to use your own billing engine, but they provide the data inside the portal for you to grab out, and you grab it out using REST. It's published with OData and this guy Jason, whoever he is. So the intent is, yeah, that you can, because you know most service providers already have their own billing engine, so rather than having a second one, just pull the data out and use your own billing engine, and that's kind of the intent. Microsoft have demoed a bunch of stuff around a data warehouse around this, and a bunch of stuff around doing analytics on the tenant subscription stuff, and doing analytics and drill down into all the usage and stuff using what do they call it, performance point inside SharePoint, or using Excel if you don't have SharePoint as well. So there's these kind of data warehouses that get, the data pulls out, and the data pulls out of a whole bunch of different sources. Like there's, it pulls out of the usage thing, but it also can pull data out of Ops Manager as well. So if you're monitoring with Ops Manager, you can pull that data as well. And that's kind of where you also get that capacity planning stuff from as well, kind of who's using what and where and that kind of stuff. That's kind of where you get that stuff from. So hopefully that answers both your questions. And then we talked about the service management automation stuff. The idea being, you know, that you can take your existing systems, you can do these new runbooks inside using PowerShell workflow. And so that's kind of, and it's kind of an area where I'm still kind of going, well, why would I use PowerShell workflow if I've got this nice GUI-based tool in Orchestrator? And I'm kind of still tossing up what that actually means. And I had a conversation with one of the guys from Microsoft, and his take was basically, if you're using the service management portal, then you don't use the UI of Orchestrator, you use PowerShell workflow and connect that way. And if you're doing anything else, then you use the Orchestrator UI. So that's kind of the difference, basically. And it's in a similar kind of experience when you've got these things happening, you can see you get a view of the, you get an automation dashboard, and you can see what runbooks are running, what sort of state they're in, that kind of stuff. So similar to what you might see inside Orchestrator, but you see it inside the portal web view. So that's kind of where that sits. We've had that slide already. Must have doubled up. So let's quickly look at the architecture and how it all kind of fits together. So there's basically a bunch of bits and pieces that make this thing fit together. There's the portals themselves. There's a tenant and admin portal. There's a service management API, and there's three APIs, and I'll show you that in a second. There's the website stuff, the virtual machine stuff, and they're kind of the most complicated bits. Databases and service bus are real easy, and automation and extensibility kind of just built in. So in terms of, if you think of the various components, this is kind of what they are. So you think of it as portals. So there's like I say, the tenant portal and the admin portal. Then there's kind of authentication bits. And so there's a tenant authentication site and an admin authentication site. And then there's your APIs. So there's an admin API. So that's kind of what the admin portal talks to. It talks to the admin API, and you can talk to that API yourself. And then there's a tenant private API and a tenant public API. And the difference being that the tenant portal talks to the tenant private API, and tenants can talk directly to the tenant public API, but they can't talk directly to the tenant private API. So if you're exposing this out to the internet, there's only two bits you really need to, there's three bits you need to expose, really. The tenant portal, the tenant public API, and the tenant authentication site. If you're doing this all internally, it doesn't really matter, but you know those are the kind of three bits for outside. And then there is a SQL database in the back end holding both configuration stuff and also all the usage and data stuff there. In terms of the website stuff, the website has got kind of two bits effectively. There's kind of the administration bit and the content delivery bit. And the content delivery bit is basically made up of three bits, which is the front ends, and they are basically IIS servers running application request routing. So they're kind of just, they're stateless. They are basically caching, front-end caches, effectively. And if you're running websites publicly, again, if you want to expose this to the internet, the only bit of this that you expose to the internet is the front ends and actually the publisher, which we'll get in a second. But so the front ends are the bit that actually deliver the content out to the internet. They are, like I say, they're caches. They retrieve content from the workers. So the workers are the guys actually doing the work there. And so those we talked about, shared workers and reserved workers, they can be both. You can have multiple instances of workers, you have multiple instances of front ends. And you know, if you've scaled out across multiple workers, you know, if one of those workers dies, cool, your website keeps working because there's another worker picking it up. If you're only on one instance and it dies, well then it, what happens is it actually fails, the controller fails it over to another instance of a worker if you've got another shared worker running. And then the content itself is actually shared on a, sitting on a shared file server in the back end. And so that's kind of the delivery bit of it. And then at the kind of the admin bit, there's a controller which is basically in charge of telling all these front ends and workers and file server or front ends and workers what to do. Basically, you know, you need to be running this website now and you need to scale up and now you over there run up another instance and those kinds of things. So the controller's in charge of that. The REST server is the API that the Azure Pack actually talks to. So Azure Pack talks to REST. That talks to controller, and controller does all the stuff that it needs to do. And then the publisher is the bit where end users talk to publish, or you know, sort of talk to publish content, basically. So that's your FTP publishing point, that's your Visual Studio deployment point, that kind of stuff. And in terms of virtual machines is kind of there's basically two bits. There's SPF and Virtual Machine Manager. You need to have both, and that's kind of as The real hard work in this is for those virtual machine things is configuring up VMM with all the templates and virtual networks and hardware profiles and all that kind of stuff. That's actually quite time consuming, but I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff today. But you know, that's kind of the hard bit, and SPF is basically there to provide the interface through to VMM. In terms of how you set this guy up, basically, to install the base stuff, you need Server 2012 or 2012 R2. You get the web platform installer. You apply IIS recommended configuration and the .NET 4.5 extended stuff. You disable IE enhanced security configuration. Don't know why, but you do. And you need SQL Server 2012 running in mixed mode. If it's running in native mode or integrated mode, doesn't work. It needs to be mixed mode. Then you install the Azure Pack stuff from the web platform installer. And it's just a bunch of downloads. I'll show you that in a second. And then in terms of configuration, basically it's a web page and you enter a database server name, some admin credentials, and basically a passphrase. And I'll show you that now actually because makes good time to do it. So here. So in fact, what I'll first show you is how to find it when you go looking for it. So the web platform installer, if you haven't played with it, it's basically a way to install a whole bunch of different web stuff from Microsoft. And it's a small download. You download it and then say, I want to put these bits and pieces on. And it goes off and downloads the bits it needs and puts them on. So if you need to find the Azure Pack stuff, products Windows Azure is actually the easiest place to find it. And you will find it at the moment under Windows Azure Pack Preview. So you see all these Portal and API Express preview. So you see all these preview sites here. Basically, you've got a couple of options in terms of deployment. That top option, Portal and API Express, basically installs all the core Azure Pack components onto a single box, and away you go. As I understand it, that's not supported in production, but it's really good for doing proof of concepts and that kind of stuff, and probably would work really well for a small internal deployment anyway. And then if you want to do a distributed install and have everything on different boxes, then you can come in and put all these different bits and pieces on individually if you need to. So that's kind of that's how you find Azure Pack. Once you've done the Portal and API Express, basically, if you do a distributed install, this wizard is repeated every time you do every component you do. So you basically enter in a SQL server, a password, and a passphrase. And so the passphrase basically is protecting the configuration so you can't have just rogue servers coming and joining in your environment. You'll see this is the first time I configured it. So I've got to enter the passphrase twice. every other time you do this, so if you're adding additional roles and stuff, it will only ask you for the password once. If you get it wrong, you can't join. If you forget what it is, you're kind of stuffed, so remember it. So, you know, it is kind of, it holds the keys to the kingdom, really. I give it a name that it's going to be referred to from the internet, doesn't really matter in this case, and away I go, and I configure it up, and that takes a few seconds to configure up. And so basically it just creates a whole bunch of websites, creates a whole bunch of things for us, and away we go. So while it's doing that, I will switch back and talk about how you set up the website stuff, because the website stuff's a bit more complicated. The website stuff basically is the same kind of thing. You've got to have 2012 R2, do the stuff, enable IE, and disable IE enhanced security configuration, disable UAC as well. There's some firewall rules you've got to enable, so you've got to enable the SMB and WMI firewall rules. You've got to have the same thing, SQL Server, and you install Websites Controller, again from the Web Platform Installer. It's a slightly different thing. I probably should have shown you, but that's all right. And then when you configure the website stuff, it's actually a bit more detailed. You've got to configure up database stuff, same again, but then you've got to tell it the machine you're going to install the REST service on and the machine that's going to be the file server as well. And while this other one's going, I'll flick back and show you that website's config as well. I've only got 5 minutes, haven't I? So that's configured. The great bit about this is that in order to do everything else after that, you've got to sign out and back in again. But so the controller, same thing. A DNS name to be for how it's going to appear on the website on the internet, and we'll just leave that. A REST server and how we're going to deploy the REST server. How we're going to what credentials we're going to use for provisioning workers. And how we're going to register to the REST server, and so that's this cloud admin thing. So it's going to create us a user inside the REST environment that is called cloud admin. And then in terms of file server, it's going to ask us for a file server name. And you can use, if you've got a NAS or something you want to use instead, you can use a NAS. If you've got a file server already configured, you can use that. But I'm just going to use the SQL Server. It might work. And it creates a share path for the website's content. It creates a user that has full access to that stuff, and it creates a user that is only user access to that stuff, and it also creates a certificate share path as well. So any certificates that get uploaded from the portal for websites, they get stored in a separate location, and it can retrieve those certificates as well. And same thing, there's a certificate user that it uses to do that. And next, usual stuff, worst practice, and away it goes, and that'll configure up the website server. So it's, you know, there's a bit more to it, but it is reasonably straightforward. So again, that goes off and takes a while. And if we'll quickly go, oops. See if this lets me in. Yep. And now I should be able to go to Management Service Administration. It's all done using self-signed certificates, so you get certificate errors everywhere. Again, once you've configured it up, go through and change all the certs and do all that kind of stuff. And again, another one. Waiting, waiting, and another one. I don't know why you get three certificate errors, but you always do. And so now we end up with basically a blank environment. What I'll quickly show you. Time we got a couple of minutes. I'll quickly show you just how you add new services. And so This is a worst practice, so don't do this. But I'm going to use the same SQL Server that I used to put my hosting databases on. And so I'll just register that SQL Server database. I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to say it's got 100 gig worth of space to create databases on, register that up, and basically that SQL server will now be available for me to add into a plan and for users to create databases on. So just, you know, most other stuff is pretty much like that. Websites is, I just register the REST endpoint, which I think we said was Teched REST. Websites. It may not have finished configuring yet, but Teched REST. And it was that cloud admin username and a password, and that registers up. It may not have, probably hasn't finished configuring yet. But that's kind of how you register the website's cloud stuff. And that's kind of, it's as easy as that to add these new services in. You just basically go and register them here, and then you can add them to plans and do that. So I've got like about a minute left. So basically, for other stuff, just showed you some of the stuff. Virtual machines is the only other one. Register SPF, register VMM, and SQL real easy, MySQL real easy. Automation and service bus, you basically just register those guys. And post install, oh gosh, I've got a few to go, but I'm going to have to flick to the end. Post install, you add some gallery resources and create some plans. So that's kind of how that stuff goes. I won't talk about deploy install patterns because it is actually time to finish. So basically, with the Azure pack, Microsoft is bringing the investments that they've made in Windows Azure on-premises and into service providers. It's built on the foundation of Windows Server and System Center, so common kind of management stack in your enterprise anyway. And so basically it's all about leveraging existing investments. And hopefully I've shown you enough to get you interested. It's, it is pretty, it's a bit to do, and you know, there are quite a few moving parts, but it's actually really cool. You can do some really cool things with it. There are some resources, so grab these. When you grab the slides, there's a couple of resources there. And fill in your evals, because that's how Microsoft knows that TechEd is adding value and the sessions are good. So thank you very much for having me. I'll be around the conference for the rest of the couple of days, so if you've got any questions, give me a shout. Thank you.